It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Everybody should get information on the Green Bay Packers from Jason Wilde every day of the year. You just go to WisconsinOnDemand.com. Though we're changing the name for that site. It's going to be a different site. And then just hit Jason Wilde. You'll be amazed how much stuff there is there. Because he's talking about the Packers on our stations 24/7. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm good because today is the day I announced that I am now supporting and maybe beginning an organization for the elimination of all officiating. We want to go to robots and machines as quickly as possible because that, as I've learned from tennis, is the way to go. And umps and officials are important. Need to have them until we can replace them. The result of what the official did, kicking out the Dodger player. Who was it? Doncic?
Lakers game last night. Yeah, there were a lot of people not happy about
that. That should never happen. And the NFL is moving correctly in that direction. You don't make stupid decisions, but every sport should explore what tennis has done and realize how much better the game is without any line judges, and all sports would benefit the same way. So that's who I am.
Yeah, but
president.
But tennis and the strike zone for baseball, measuring the location of the football for first downs, those mm-hmm. are all things that robots or technology can do.
Yeah.
I don't know about some of the other aspects. Like you're going to have like robots like in that Will Smith movie that are going to be like running alongside as officials, and then they're going to officiate whether it's a foul or not. And
sure. Well, like, I don't. Some of those things are very difficult and will take a long time. But as Jim McElvain suggested years ago, you can have things that you put on people's hands. There are ways technically to do it to increase and improve the ability. But it has to start with the premise that there is no need, as many have told me, for the human element in officiating. None. Officials and officiating has one purpose, to make it as fair as possible for the athletes who compete. Then they can be done much better with machines and robots. But, you know, you can't. Those things you mentioned should be done immediately. Others, it may take years. But that should be the approach. And it starts with the understanding, which I'm sure officials would hate, but sorry. Truck drivers are learning the same thing.
So my issue, because in principle I agree with you, because the other part of this
I love it. That's a plus, that's an A for me with you. In principle, I'll
I mean that wholeheartedly. My buddy John Benson, who you know,
I do.
Like he was a longtime official, and he and
Very
I
good.
Always text during games, and I have learned so much about officiating. But I don't know how he did it. Like the level of thick skin, the level of professionalism, all the stuff that's required mm-hmm. to be good at that, with all the crap you have to put up with from fans and players and coaches.
Yeah, well, I can only say I did that. I was when I played in Europe, I was an umpire because I lost in the tournament so quickly. In order to make money, they put me up in the chair, and.
Okay,
so after one, the guy comes over and goes, you're a hell of a lot better ump than you are a player. And then, thanks. I'll take
That's
that.
That's a pretty low bar.
I'm like, no, it isn't. To me, it was easy. You're not friends. You're a machine. My job is to get everything right. And players that would complain.
I can see you being good. I take that. I can see you being good at that for that exact.
At the age of 15, I did an NCAA championship quarterfinal match at 15. That tells you how pathetic the system was.
But did your dad come to watch you officiate?
No, I was an orphan. Nice job, though. No one knows what the reference to that is. My father never attended one of my tennis matches.
They've heard it before.
Yeah, and I love my dad, but he had no interest.
I know you do.
And I don't know why people thought parents should go. That was the part. Why would my parents come? Don't they want to watch you play? Never thought much about it. But anyway, all right, back to the officiating.
Well, the reason I bring him up is, like, first I was watching the women's final on Sunday. And, like, and I like Dawn Staley. I think she's a brilliant coach. She obviously was a fantastic player.
Great coach.
But, I mean, she was working the official.
Yeah.
And it was clear that her team was struggling, and she was taking it out on the official. And there was, I mean, she got right up to the line, right? And so that was part of it. And then, you know, JB's point to me when I was watching the championship game between Florida and Houston, first of all, that's a really difficult team to officiate, right? In Houston, the way they play defensively.
Yes.
But it felt like it was very consistent. And then there was like a moment where like they called 3 fouls on Houston in 9 seconds. And it almost felt like everything that they had done, what I thought was so well officiating, it flipped in that one moment. And then it was at a critical juncture of the game. And my issue is, as officials, you can do everything you can to take the human element out of it. As a human, right, to try and be unbiased and just, this is what I saw. But I don't know how many people are actually capable of doing it, like you were officiating, refereeing a tennis match. But I don't, umpiring. But I don't, like, it's just such a hard job.
Yes.
That one of the reasons why it would be great if you could get robots and AI to do all of it is, who really wants to do that job? Like, Sydney plays soccer. And they have, you know, young soccer players who are officials, and parents chew them out. And I'm like, I can't. What are you doing? You're yelling at a 15-year-old. In volleyball, in club volleyball, which Sydney plays, like in between the games you play, a lot of times you have to rep. Now there's an adult umpire, but the judges of whether the ball's in or out, the ones that are keeping score, they're all kids from one of the teams that's not playing during that window. And now Sydney's very good at it, and she doesn't miss a lot of calls, whether it's in or out. But, like, I always go in between those games because I just don't want to – I want to be there in case some parent gets out of hand about a kid, whether they called it in or out.
You should know the first soccer match I ever attended, I was an official. I think it was 6 and under for our daughter. Never. It's just, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do anything because you don't have offsides. That was the key. However, then I did my son's game that he was 6. It's the only time I got mad. These are 6. They're just running around like whatever. And the parents were yelling on the sidelines over everything. Yeah. Like somebody got hurt and I didn't do it. This guy's yelling. And I stopped and just yelled, "Shut up," as loud as I could at the guy. So what are they going to do?
Well, there are definitely officials.
So that was the only time I definitely lost it. But yeah, I'm a firm believer that all leagues should say that if parents are out of control, you just get kicked out. You just can't do it. You can't yell at all. You can't complain because leagues need officials more than anything else because there's a shortage because nobody wants to do it. So you say anything negative, you're gone.
That should be the rule. Well, I almost was because at a volleyball match, I was sitting next to a guy who was yelling at the official, and the official turned and thought it was me, and he threatened to kick me out. And I was like, "I didn't. It wasn't me. I didn't say anything." Like he had no idea who.
No, that is the responsibility of the person controlling the gym, not of the officials. The person controlling the gym before the game starts says, anybody complains about the official yelling at any point, we're just kicking you out of the gym. We don't have enough of these people, so if you're going to, and I mean like anything, the slightest complaint of the official, by my opinion, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's willing to do that. So
Zero tolerance.
Yes,
I agree.
Zero tolerance. No, -2 tolerance. Less than 0. If you look like you might do it, gone. Anyway, all right, let's get to the Packers. What do we have? Anything?
Well, I am at, I'm actually at the tour stop for the tailgate tour here in Madison. I was getting ready to head back home to Green Bay, but I stopped here to see Lucas Van Ness and Tucker Kraft.
Yeah, what does he have to say for himself?
Well, I'll say this. I talked to Lucas yesterday, and I think he understands that this is a pivotal year for him. And He didn't make any grand pronouncements, which I think is smart, but he knows that there's a lot.
Right, but my answer is, what's happened? I mean, when you take somebody when he was taken, They clearly see some stuff. What did they see that also clearly hasn't occurred? I'd love his insight, because he, I'm sure, still believes he can play.
Yeah, and you know, I've had this conversation with him, like, you know, and I don't want to. Rashawn Gary has not arrived, in my opinion. He got paid like he arrived. He has not arrived. He's not an elite pass rusher.
Right, he's had some moments.
And he's had production.
Yeah.
He's capable of far more than what he's done. So, you know, but I think it's important. One of his first year in 19, when he was the 12th overall pick, they had Za'Darius Smith on one side, Preston Smith on the other. Those guys weren't going anywhere in that starting lineup. And so Rashawn Gary got limited opportunities. And I remember writing a story in his second year for The Athletic when I was writing for them. And there were, I just got buried in the comment section, which, you know, the people that say don't read the comments, they're right. And I was a mouthpiece for the organization. But it takes time for some of these guys. And it clearly did with him. And then, you know, the thing about Gary is that it was finally seemingly clicking in that third season they tore his ACL. And so I don't know. Obviously, Lucas hasn't had that type of an injury. But his first year, he was behind Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary in 23. Then last year, they bring Preston Smith back, which I didn't think they were going to do, frankly. And then they trade him midway through the season. But Lucas struggled in the transition to the 4-3 then. And he had played at, you know, he played at Iowa. He played inside at times. He just didn't look comfortable. So to me, that's why this is such a pivotal year for him, is because now it's year two in the system. It's year three in the league. It's fair to expect and demand of him a big jump in this year. It's okay. You can say, hey, you give him a mulligan for last year because they changed systems. He's had, you know, he had two different coordinators in his first 2 years, two different systems. But now's the time for him to be a big
what
time
is he,
player.
What is he going to do? Or tell me what you see, skills that.
Well, he's strong as a, he's incredibly strong.
Right. But, does he just bowl through people? What is he in the perfect world?
And that's not right. And even in the Big Ten, you can do that, right? You're going against tackles sometimes.
I'm listening to whatever you say.
Right. You're better than them. So you can bull rush guys that you're stronger than. You can cast them aside, and you're just better. That doesn't happen here in the NFL. And so you have to have all the different counter moves that are required to make you a diversified pass rusher. And I would think, I don't know, I haven't asked Lucas this specifically, but I know that's one of the things he's watching some tapes of him or some social media of him in his workouts this offseason. That's clearly something he's working on, is to diversify his toolbox of ways to rush the passer and get past.
But
the
I mean,
he can do that.
Jason, I don't think that's going to happen. You know that players, they don't.
No, I'll give you an example. I mean, this guy didn't obviously become a great player, but the Packers drafted Mike Neal out of Purdue in the second round, and
I remember
he was in the 2010 draft. Yeah, and he did nothing for 2 years. And then in his third season, he had like 8 sacks or something like that. And he was like a good player. Now, it turned out that maybe there was some performance-enhancing stuff that went on there. If I remember, there were some allegations about that. But, you know, he didn't last very long after that. But I've seen guys that the light goes on in year three. And clearly the Packers think that that's something that can happen. Whether they're right about that, we'll find out.
All right. Well, we will continue with this discussion because you're on every show all the time.
Including yours again tomorrow.
No, you're not on tomorrow. Just want to let you know.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up. I've been preempted.
Brian Bulaga runs everything, and I don't normally like to say this, but
don't have to say it. I just won't be on.
You will not be on. Nicely done, Jace. Perfectly done by Jason Wilde. Thanks, Jason. Tim Van Boren,
right,
not next,
care,
but soon. Oh, and now I want to give people a chance to win. ESPN Fantasy Focus Football Podcast coming to Green Bay on the 23rd. Live show at the Tundra Trio. ESPN Wisconsin wants to send you and a friend or an enemy up to Green Bay to see the show happen live. Caller number 4 1-800-990-3776. Caller number 4, the Carbless Talk and Text Line. This is more. 1-800-990-3776. Meet all the hosts and free food, free drinks, free fantasy focused football podcast merchandise. Caller 4, 1-800-990-3776. Visit ESPNWisconsinContest.com for full details. Again, Tim Van Voren, not next, but very soon.